Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
The board of directors at the NAACP voted to endorse marriage equality, which is, you know, a historic achievement, and we couldn't be more pleased and proud.
We have to choose our faith over our love for our African-American leaders, and I will tell you now, and I will always tell you, we will choose our faith every single time.
It's almost like we're being punished for the fact that we serve a lot of people and that we don't ask for baptismal certificates at the door.
Lutherans who are married to Catholics, love issues, etc.
The church is one foundation. It's Jesus Christ, our Lord.
I will admit, I don't know if I'm still a nerd, definitely a former nerd, but with the prevalence and the rise of fantasy fiction, you don't have to be kind of the typical nerd to not only understand but enjoy this kind of fantasy fiction. I'm not talking about kind of the pulp stuff that gets cranked out you see on the shelves of your local bookstore necessarily. There may be a few gems in there. There is also what we can rightfully call classical fantasy literature that strongly resonates with a Christian worldview, even though at first glance it doesn't seem to represent a Christian worldview or a Christian mindset in any way whatsoever. But it does. We're going to be talking about Christians and fantasy fiction here for the first half hour of Issues Etc. Live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 30th of May. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. You can join us for the next 2 hours. Andrew Boll will be our guest to talk about Christians and fantasy fiction. Deaconess Pam Nielsen joins us to teach a Sunday school lesson. We'll be talking about, going back to the Old Testament, Genesis 24, talking about Rebecca serving at the well. It's part of getting one of the patriarchs a wife. Pastor Matt Harrison will be our guest. We'll be talking with him about the burdens and responsibilities of pastors, a little bit of Issues Etc. comment line, and we'll be talking about confessing the Christian faith, what it means to same-say with God. Pastor Joshua Hayes, author of the forthcoming Bible study for the Lutheran Witness magazine titled Say the Same Thing. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issues. ETC. Dr. Andrew Boll taught literature at a Christian high school for 7 years, and he's author of a new book called The Hero and the Dragon, Building Christian Character Through Fantasy Fiction. Andrew, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
What is it about fantasy fiction, as opposed to other kinds of fiction, that sets it apart as particularly, as you would say, applicable to the Christian life?
Well, I think a large part of it has to do with the hero's journey motif, which I wrote about in the first chapter. It's definitely a strong parallel to the life of Christ. You see this theme of heroes who are facing these terrible evils in the world. It requires sacrifice on their part. There's the nature of good versus evil. And you see the forces of good overcoming in the end. I think that's one of the main ways. I know a lot of people have been happy to see a return to more of a classical interest in literature just because of many of the values and characteristics that are found in there.
Go into some more detail on that hero's journey motif. How do you find it, if not paralleling, then in some ways being reminiscent of what we find of Christ's public ministry?
Well, not only of Christ's public ministry, but also of ours as well. For Christ himself, we see many of the similar patterns in his life reflected in the literature today. The hero who has the unknown or special lineage or heritage, the hero who goes off, and though they're surrounded by companions and they have wise and helpful guides, they are asked to face this darkness by themselves. The hero who is asked to sacrifice their life, their happiness, their ordinary world for the sake of something outside of themselves. And oftentimes you even see, even more specifically, things like a death and rebirth theme in many of the stories that we have in fantasy fiction, where the hero or someone in the story will actually undergo sometimes a literal rebirth, just as Jesus Christ had to die and was raised again on the third day. We see a descent into the underworld many times, not only in the stories today, but going all the way back to some of the classical works with heroes like Hercules and Aeneas and these people who had to sometimes literally descend into an underworld, and sometimes it's just a symbolic descent.
Okay, so give us some specific examples of what you're talking about from the kind of fantasy fiction that we might be familiar with.
Sure. I guess one of the real popular ones lately, the Harry Potter series, I know a lot of people have talked about that, and you see the character of Harry who has this unknown past or lineage which kind of comes out as the story progresses. There's definitely strong symbolism in some of the later books with the sacrifice on his behalf of the people around him, the situation at King's Cross train station, and then him coming back to show the people that the battle's over, it's been won, the triumphant return. I think that, you know, some of these things have been there for a long time. Certainly, fantasy fiction has had a long history, but I think recently with stories like those, the Lord of the Rings movies that came out in 2000, we've seen definitely a surge in interest in fantasy fiction.
What about magic? What role does it play in the genre? And how should Christians who are reading fantasy fiction regard it? It's a somewhat complex question, isn't it?
It is. Magic has definitely been the bone of contention for fantasy fiction as long as it's existed as a genre. That's actually the chapter that I chose as the sample chapter to put up on the website for anyone who wants to read a free sample is the second chapter, which is all about magic. For many of the Christian fantasy authors like Tolkien and Lewis, magic was seen as a way to clearly establish boundaries between the fantasy world and the real world. It was not intended to reflect or promote real-world pagan witchcraft in any way, but simply as a device to show the themes and also to enrich the story world and draw readers into it and help them to become immersed in the story.
The worlds themselves were permeated by magic. It wasn't that magic was something practiced in our world, but we're really talking, in some sense, about intentionally magical worlds, right?
That's true. And it's almost like a whole different set of physical laws that govern the worlds that they were taking place in. The fantasy fiction, usually it's in an alternate reality or some kind of a different universe or parallel type of reality. And you see magic there acting much the same way as we have the laws of our universe are governed by gravity and so forth. I mentioned in the book that we don't find it strange that, you know, certain creatures have abilities that we don't, the ability to fly or to breathe underwater and that kind of thing. And many of the fantasy creatures have magical abilities or traits, but it's regarded in much the same way. It's just part of their nature and their character. And there's definitely a reflection to humanity and our condition in that as well, that there are different kinds of people, and we've been given different gifts and traits and abilities, and we use them to serve.
Okay, that's one thing, and I understand that completely. I think probably most listeners just say, okay, we're talking about a literary device there. What about the practitioners of magic in fantasy fiction?
There is an extra chapter in there as well about wizards and witches and different people who use magic, and they also represent, I think, different kinds of people. Again, magic in most fantasy works is not meant to be a literal rendering of pagan witchcraft in our world, although there are certainly fantasy works out there like that, and I do caution readers in the book to be on their guard against some of those influences. But I think magic often represents simply abilities that people have, leadership or charisma, wisdom, and the way that different magic users use those abilities in the books shows a lot about their character, just as you will see people who may be gifted with abilities in our world who use them for good and noble purposes. There are also people who use them to hurt people. And I think fantasy fiction reflects that in a very meaningful way.
One of the things that I find in kind of the mainstream of fantasy literature that Christians are familiar with, you mentioned Harry Potter, the Tolkien stuff, C.S. Lewis, and some others, is that there's a certain, even within that, the context of the literature, there's a cautionary approach to magic. It's not something that's to be trifled with. It's not something to be used, or it has a potential for abuse. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, and I think we do see that in much of fantasy literature because it is the characters who have those powers who are most susceptible to temptation to abusing those powers. It's the great wizards who can become the greatest villains because of their own abilities. I think we see that very strongly in the Lord of the Rings trilogy with characters like Saruman, who has been given this ability and this authority, and he turns against it and uses it for evil purposes. And then there are characters like Gandalf, who recognizes that because of his powers, he needs to be very careful and cautious with the temptations that he's faced with so that he doesn't fall into the same fate.
This magical context for fantasy literature, it also introduces other races or creatures, beings. You talk about dragons and elves and orcs and goblins and the whole panoply of non-human characters that are, well, in some ways, very human. What is the author of fantasy fiction trying to do very often with those other races or other characters?
I think, like all of literature, fantasy fiction reflects a lot about life and the human condition in general. And I think especially for Christians, when they read fantasy literature, they can see these different races as reflecting different aspects of humanity, different types of people, even though they all may be contained within ourselves in one form or another. I talk about the elves who love beauty and nature and how they represent different kinds of Christians who provide a wholesome atmosphere, and that's kind of the focus of their ministry. And there are the dwarves who focus on craftsmanship and sturdy buildings and that kind of thing. And there we've got people who are providing the foundation for our faith and constructing a strong base upon which we teach. And then there are also, you know, the goblins and the orcs and the dragons, and they represent different challenges that we face as Christians, different temptations, different hardships that this world naturally produces in its state of sinfulness.
We'll take a break. Andrew Bowl is our guest. He taught literature at a Christian high school for 7 years. He's author of the new book, The Hero and the Dragon, Building Christian Character Through Fantasy Fiction. When we come back, we're going to talk about how it is that Satan often counterfeits the things of God and how that counterfeit is reflected in fantasy fiction. Stay tuned.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 30th of May. Andrew Bowl is our guest. We're talking about Christians and fantasy fiction. Before the break, you were talking about these
fantasy races that are often kind of the stock of characters in fantasy fiction. They're pretty common throughout there. And one of the things I noticed, at least in Tolkien's literature, I don't know if it extends beyond that, is that in the case of one of those races you talked about, the evil orcs, they are, I think he describes them as counterfeits of the good elves. Does that in some way, in this fantasy fiction world, show how Satan does his work by counterfeiting the things of God?
That's very true, and that's a strong theme in the book, that all of these good things that God provides in this world can be tainted and corrupted by sin, by the fallen condition that we're in. Just as you have the powerful wizards who have the wisdom and the magical abilities, they can be corrupted and become dark warlocks or necromancers. You also have the same thing happening with the other races. You have the elves, and then their same love of nature can be converted to a hatred of nature in the goblins. You have, even more specifically, even good intentions, good abilities like courage and fortitude can be just as dangerous when they're applied to an evil character. In a dragon, they have their own warped sense of wisdom in their great cunning and their intelligence, but they use it for different purposes.
There are a couple other things that are often found in fantasy literature, kind of a quest for treasure, I guess is for lack of a better word. What place does it play there, and how should Christians read it?
I think the quest for treasure, usually in fantasy, is a motivation for the character setting off on the quest, but then they find something much more meaningful as they go. They find that the way that they're being changed by the journey itself overshadows whatever reward they originally thought they were after. Right now, I actually just finished up my second book, which is Building Christian Character Through the Hobbit. And it focused specifically on the book The Hobbit and how these themes are played out in that. And here we have a character, Bilbo Baggins, who originally goes off on the quest after the hoarded gold of the dragon, but he finds in the end that it's the change in himself that is the most valuable thing that he takes away from it. But also, there is a connection to the treasure that the dragon is guarding in the fact that the dragon, Satan, in our world, has guarded a treasure, and going back again to the connection of the hero's journey to Jesus himself, the treasure is freed. It's able to do what it was originally meant to do, which is to go out and provide life and health to the people who are in the surrounding area. With the downfall of the dragon, now we're able to take full ownership of that treasure.
And in that story, the particular one you're talking about there, the dragon is destroyed, but only after really wreaking havoc, doing his worst, even in the midst of his downfall. Talk about that.
That's true. One of the interesting things in The Hobbit is the idea of the desolation of the dragon, this growing, spreading area of death and decay all around the mountain where the dragon resides. And furthermore, he goes out and he sets fire to villages, he eats their cattle, he burns their crops, and even in his death throes, he comes crashing down on the city itself and destroys it. I think that, you know, there's definitely a parallel there, too, to Genesis 3, where God says that Jesus is going to crush the serpent's head, but at the same time, the serpent will strike his heel. Even in The Hobbit, though, the slayer of the dragon emerges alive and victorious, even though the dragon comes down on top of him.
That leads us to the subject almost, one would hope we would be as cautious about it as the subject of magic, and that is of violence and warfare in fantasy fiction. What would you have to say about that? Because it is a pretty constant theme, and the ones we've talked about here, in a lot of ways, the climax of the story is often massive, bloody warfare.
It is, and I think the really good works of fantasy usually address that in themselves. I don't like to see stories that portray really graphic, bloody violence. And you do find a lot of that, especially in the so-called swords and sorcery genre within fantasy fiction. And these are stories that are meant more as simply entertainment. They're kind of the adventure quest stories where a group of people goes out after a treasure and they're killing monsters and that kind of thing. A lot of times in those types of stories, there really isn't as much depth to them or value. But in the classics and in the really good ones, you find that the hero definitely gets a sense of the tragedy of the situation in the midst of the violence. Their loss of innocence happens as they see friends who are being hurt or killed. and even in the destruction that happens in the conflict with the forces of evil. And with Memorial Day being just recently, I think too that a lot of the really good books address the fact that even though there's sacrifice and there is violence and death, those who come out of it see that despite their sorrow over the loss that has happened, they believe in the good that's being done through that sacrifice.
Should some extra caution be exercised in fantasy literature when the themes are, in particular, the world of the undead or the dead, as the case may be, or demonic forces?
I think so. It's kind of fascinating the interest that our society has had lately on the concept of the undead, skeletons and zombies and vampires. There's been obviously a lot of teen vampire fiction out there lately. And I think for a long time people recognized these character archetypes as being patently evil. And we kind of see that shifting now in our society with this postmodern secular humanist ideal that everything's relative and morals are relative. And so I do think we need to be careful. One of my favorite things about fantasy fiction is that usually when it's done right, good is good and evil is evil, and it's easy for kids to see that. And sometimes those, there tends to be kind of a gray area in some of the works that are coming out these days. I think with the demonic, there does need to be extra caution. Certainly, there's no harm, as far as I see it, in demons being the enemies or the villains of the story, because let's look at reality. Demons and devils are our enemies and villains, and especially when you look at it in the context of the hero's journey pattern and the life of Christ.
Two quick final questions for you before we wrap up here in a few minutes. What kind of fantasy fiction, and it's a broad genre, would you caution parents, especially with regard to children, against?
Well, I think any time that you're going to have your kids read something, obviously the best idea is to read through it yourself, in light of what you know or what you've learned about the genre, and make sure that there aren't any of those things that are going to cause you to be uncomfortable. Particularly, I would look out for some of these pagan concepts of magic, things that are going to cause kids to become interested in witchcraft or black magic or that kind of thing. I would try to understand what kinds of ideas there are that are out there concerning Wicca and animism and shamanism and that kind of thing, so that you can recognize those in literature and avoid it. I think you touched a good note about violence, making sure that there isn't graphic or gratuitous violence on the pages either. When possible, it's great to read things with kids. I know that isn't always something that parents are able to do in our busy, hectic lives. Reading good reviews by Christian people, asking questions, for instance, if you have an English teacher at a local Christian school, finding out what they know about those books before putting them into the hands of your kids, because there are definitely some dangerous things out there.
Real quickly, if you were going to give a parent some advice that son is interested in fantasy fiction, what book would you say you should put into the hands of a young man, young woman who's interested in fantasy fiction? A good place
sure.
to start. About a minute.
Yeah.
Less
and,
than a minute.
And in the book, I don't really give a list of these books are good and these ones are bad, but I would say right now, like I said, I'm writing one about The Hobbit. That's one of the most fantastic examples of good Christian allegory. Certainly anything by C.S. Lewis, The Chronicles of Narnia, some of these classical ones. I think Harry Potter series was done well, and especially if you read it in that context or that frame of mind, looking for some of these Christian symbols and trying to look for the character and values that can be taught through it.
Andrew Bowl taught literature in a Christian high school for 7 years. He's author of the new book, The Hero and the Dragon, Building Christian Character Through Fantasy Fiction. You can find out more about The Hero and the Dragon at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Andrew, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will be our guest on this Wednesday afternoon. We're going to be talking with her about Rebecca serving at the wells, Genesis 24, and our Sunday school lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen when we come back. After that, Pastor Joshua Hayes will join us, talk about what it means to same say with God and with one another, confessing the faith. And Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will be our guest a little later in the program. We'll talk with him about the great burdens and responsibilities of pastors. Speaking of pastors, thanks to Pastor Jacob Sutton and Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Terre Haute, Indiana, for voting recently to become a congregational sponsor in part of the Issues Etc. 300. This is a growing group of congregations that support Issues Etc. to the tune of $1,000 or more in their mission or advertising budget. And speaking of budgets, July the 1st will begin a new fiscal year for many congregations. That means right now your congregation is putting its budget together. They're making the decision about what to include in that budget, and that means right now is the time for you to go to your congregation and ask them to join the Issues Etc. 300. We've made it easy for you. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support. You'll find there a one-page flyer that you can actually download and take to your congregation. It explains everything about the Issues Etc. 300, and it gives you that in, that foot in the door to ask your congregation about joining the Issues Etc. 300. Remember, July 1st is the deadline. It's a new fiscal year for a lot of congregations, so download that flyer and ask now the Issues Etc. 300. When we come back, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will go to Genesis 24, Rebecca at the well.
Noted author and history professor Dr. Paul Meyer on the uniqueness of Issues Etc.
I'm delighted not only to listen to Issues Etc., but also to have the privilege of being on the program from time to time. Issues is never afraid to take a stand on the thorny, vexing issues that clutter our daily horizons. And it does so in the name of a solidly based Christianity that doesn't flirt with fads or fantasies. Whereas some Christian programs sidestep ethical and doctrinal questions in our day, Issues takes them head on in a fearless, responsible, thoughtful manner. Both head and heart are involved when Issues applies Holy Scripture.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois. And Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.
Treadmill for the mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The United Kingdom has the British version of Obamacare already in place. Here's how their nationalized health care plan impacts abortion. Every week, British citizens pay about 1.3 million tax dollars to fund repeat abortions. In other words, second, third, fourth, fifth, or more. This doesn't even include the tax dollars funding first-time abortions. The newspaper called the London Daily Mail reports taxpayers are funding as many as 9 abortions in a woman's lifetime. This is what will happen in America under Obamacare. And remember, the UK does a fraction of the number of abortions there compared to the US. So the money you and I will be forced to pay could be $8 million a week for repeat abortions. Obamacare must be repealed.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.